Today's Washing Tech episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at washingtech.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And also Warby Parker. Get a free 5-day home try-on at warbyparkertrial.com/joe. 5 pairs, 5 days, and the try-on is 100% free. That's warbyparkertrial.com/joe.
It's much more crucial for the worker to be able to survive and provide for their family than it is for the employer to have an individual worker. So there's an asymmetrical situation existing there.
Welcome to the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast. We deliver the latest tech policy news and brightest tech policy experts to you.
Wherever you are, so you can stay productive, relevant, and informed in less time.
From Washington, D.C., it's the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast with Joe Miller.
A new Facebook breach affects 50 million users. Elon Musk steps down as Tesla chair. And Alex Wood is my guest today. Facebook reported a new data breach that began to take effect in July of 2017 when Facebook updated its View As feature, which allows users to see how their profile looks to specific friends. The company said it didn't discover the breach until September. While the company didn't disclose exactly which user data was stolen or who stole it, it did reveal that the hackers obtained access tokens that enabled them to manipulate user accounts. Facebook says it has notified affected users and required them to log back into their accounts. Elon Musk has stepped down as the chairman of Tesla and will need to pay a $20 million fine for his tweet last month saying he had funding secured for a $420 per share buyout of the company. The Securities and Exchange Commission had sued Musk for the tweet saying it misled investors. Musk will stay on as company CEO. Federal prosecutors have launched an investigation into ad agencies who buy advertising time on behalf of large corporate brands. A recent Association of National Retailers report found that media outlets have been offering ad agencies rebates, cash back after they meet spending thresholds, but that the money hasn't been making its way back to advertisers. Suzanne Vranica and Nicole Hung report in the Wall Street Journal. The EPA will be dissolving its science office and ostensibly rolling it into the agency's Office of Research and Development. This is the same agency that's basically censored the terms climate change from its website, speeches, and all of its PR collateral. It has also stopped giving climate change awards and is working to roll back fuel efficiency standards. The doctrine of federal preemption took center stage this week in three different areas: net neutrality, privacy, and 5G build-out. Remember, the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution makes federal law the supreme law of the land. On the net neutrality front, the state of California passed its own set of net neutrality rules that mirror the ones the FCC passed in 2015, but that Ajit Pai's FCC repealed earlier this year. The Department of Justice is now suing the state of California, claiming the federal preemption doctrine. On privacy, Amazon, Alphabet, Apple, AT&T, Charter, and Twitter told the Senate Commerce Committee last week that they would support federal privacy regulation that would preempt California's privacy law, which is set to go into effect in 2020, and would give California consumers more control over their data. But a national privacy framework that would preempt state privacy rules has support from both sides of the aisle. And on 5G, the FCC passed new rules last week that would minimize the role of local and state authorities in the review process to build out 5G wireless infrastructure. By limiting fees that local and state authorities charge carriers in order to deploy 5G and capping the shot clock to require local authorities to approve 5G applications within 60 to 90 days. 5 days following the FCC's order to limit local and state oversight of 5G deployment, Verizon announced that it would be deploying 5G in Houston, Indianapolis, Los Angeles, and Sacramento. This makes Verizon the first company in the world to offer 5G on a commercial basis to individual consumers. Brian Fung has more in the Washington Post. Finally, the Federal District Court of the Northern District of California has ruled to decertify a class of nearly 240,000 Uber drivers who are suing Uber, saying that they should be considered employees rather than independent contractors. This would entitle them to better benefits and things like reimbursement for gas. A decision was long expected since the U.S. Supreme Court ruled back in May in Epic Systems v. Lewis that courts are required to honor arbitration agreements that gig workers sign up for. All 240,000 drivers would now have to pursue their claims individually. You can find links to all of these stories in the show notes and also on our Twitter feed, and our handle is at WashingTech. Stay with us. Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. You can listen at the gym, in the car, or on your morning run. How about Staying Alive, The 1970s and the Last Days of the Working Class by Jefferson Cowie? You can download Staying Alive free by trying audible.com. Sign up for your free audiobook and 30-day trial today at washingtech.com/book.
Tech policy is global policy. This is the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast, serving the world.
My guest today is Alex Wood, researcher at the Oxford Internet Institute. He's a sociologist of work and employment, focusing on the changing nature of employment relations and labor market transformation. Alex is currently researching new forms of worker voice and collective action in the online gig economy as part of the iLabor project. Alex previously researched online labor markets and virtual employment relations in sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia as part of the Microwork and Virtual Production Networks in sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia project. This project investigates the economic and social implications of new forms of economic activities in the context of ICTs for development. He completed his PhD at the University of Cambridge. Please welcome Alex Wood. Alex, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
So we often hear remote work platforms like Uber and TaskRabbit promote the flexibility of remote work as something of a liberating factor. It's not a 9-to-5. You can drive or perform tasks according to your own schedule, set your own hours. It sounds like a dream. But you wrote a paper recently commissioned by the UK that looks at remote work from another angle. So let's start by looking at the different types of gig work. How did you define online gig work for this paper?
Yeah, so as you say, when people usually think of the gig economy, they think of what we call the local gig economy, so Uber or Deliveroo, where you're kind of buying a service through a platform, through an app on a smartphone, but then the service is being provided locally, so you're getting into an Uber in that physical locality. But surveys suggest a similar number of people are using similar platforms to work remotely, so doing digital labor, so things like translation, transcription, programming, graphic design. And because this is digital labor, they can then work remotely via their computer in their home. So that's what we're really focusing on, is this remote form of gig economy work.
And you describe job quality and digital control as the two key areas researchers should look at when it comes to remote work. Tell us about the existing research that existed prior to releasing your paper.
So when people have looked at the impacts of digital technology on work and employment and kind of whether that's a positive impact or a negative impact, that research is often focused on call centers as being seen as kind of an exemplary site in which to study these impacts. And that has then really focused on how digital technology is used as a way to increase surveillance and control of workers. And it's often referred to as part of a tailorization of white collar work, or digital tailorization. And so that in these kind of existing accounts, the focus is often how in call centers, you have a lot of digital measurements and statistical analysis of individual workers' performance. And then underperforming workers will then be disciplined on the basis of how well they're performing and this electronic monitoring that's going on. And so it's being referred to as an assembly line in the head or an electronic sweatshop. And obviously, in an electronic sweatshop, you don't have much autonomy, you don't have much flexibility. And so we really wanted to investigate whether that's the correct way to be thinking about the gig economy. Are gig economy platforms part of this tailorization of work? Or as the platforms claim, are they giving people autonomy and flexibility?
And by tailorization, you're referring to Frederick Winslow Taylor, the industrial engineer.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
exactly.
And so, yeah. So now his approach was, well, what were the principles that he laid out?
His principles were basically that you could break down tasks, de-skill tasks as much as possible so that they would become possible to measure. And then you could closely monitor and measure those tasks. And then you'd be able to know if workers were underperforming or not. And that's kind of what process people argue happens in call centers, that people, the tasks are being scripted. You're given a script that you have to follow, jokes that you have to make. And then you're closely monitored to see whether you're following that script, but also whether you're converting enough calls into sales or whatever it is that you're trying to achieve in that call center.
Well, it sounds like a boss from hell.
Yeah.
So you discuss open employment relationships versus closed employment relationships. Contrast those for us, Alex, and tell us how these two types of employment arrangements have evolved post-World War II.
Yeah, so during the Second World War in both the US and in Europe, workplaces started to develop administrative rules which ordered how things were getting done, set down the rules by which everybody operated. And so there'd be rules which for the workers to follow, but managers were also constrained in their actions by the rules which were policed by trade unions and collective bargaining. Promotion was kind of rationalized through internal labor markets. So there was a set of rules whereby somebody would gain seniority based on the length of time that they are in that workplace. People knew they had the security in knowing that if they continued working at this firm for this amount of time, they'd get this amount of pension at the end, and they'd have this amount of security. But then in the 1970s, these kind of more rationalized workplaces started coming under competitive pressures as globalization spread. And in order to be more flexible, to be able to meet demand more closely, employers started wanting to get rid of what they saw as rigidities, particularly around collective bargaining and workplace security, and move to more market-based forms of employment where, you know, rather than your wages being based on collective bargaining, your wages are based on your performance within the workplace and your performance within the labor market. People start improving their conditions by moving employers using their market power, labor market bargaining power, as opposed to their using a trade union to improve their working conditions. So we've really seen this move towards kind of markets being at the center of how firms and employers operate, rather than having administrative rules which everybody follows.
So what did you find? What were the results of your paper?
So we interviewed 125 remote gig economy workers and surveyed around 700 other workers. And what we found is how, rather than being a process of tailorization, how these platforms operate is based around giving workers ratings, which then an algorithm is used to create a reputation. So what's kind of central on a platform like Uber is having a good rating and getting good ratings from your customers. And if you get a bad rating, then the algorithm will eventually deactivate you. And the remote gig economy platforms operate in a similar way, but if you're getting bad ratings, your reputation will go down, the algorithm will rank you lower, and you won't get any future work or won't get as much future work. So we find this is a really powerful form of control. So everybody told us how crucial it was to get a good rating, and you had to please your customers. And that meant people were working at night, people were working very long shifts to meet their customers' deadlines. There was also a downward pressure on pay because clients had so much power over the workers. And that meant that people were working on many different gigs, working for many different clients and trying to meet all of those demands. So there was kind of a lot of overwork, work intensification, sleep deprivation. But at the same time, because people were free to work however they wanted, they were free to do the work as they pleased. What mattered was getting a good rating at the end of the job. They had freedom over how they achieved that end. people also experienced a lot of autonomy and flexibility, so they could work where, when they wanted, where they wanted, and do the jobs how they wanted. And people really valued not having a boss kind of stood behind them, like a boss from hell, telling them how to do the work. So we find it's kind of a new form of control where it's very powerful and people are working very hard, but they also experience a lot of autonomy and flexibility.
So I wonder what the... how we're thinking about labor regulation in this new world.
So I think what's crucial for me is thinking about why do we have labor regulations in the first place? And we have labor regulations and laws because we recognize that workers and employers aren't in an equal market bargaining position. It's much more crucial for the worker to get a job, to have an income, to be able to survive and provide for their family than it is for the employer to have an individual worker. So there's an asymmetrical situation existing there. Mm-hmm. And so because the worker is more dependent on the employer than the employer is on them. And so that's kind of, I think, what's crucial is when we're thinking about whether we should have what labor regulations we need or should have, is thinking about, is the worker dependent on that source of income? And if they are, then they need some forms of protections. And so if a gig economy worker is dependent on that platform, then they should have protections such as the minimum wage and sick leave, things like that. And so that's kind of crucial for me, is thinking, why do we need labor protections? And if we need labor protections, then how can we make them work in the kind of future of work?
So a lot of different, a lot of changes here. I mean, when I first started as a media and tech lawyer, the issues were very simple. There were issues about infrastructure. There were issues about media diversity. But now there are so many different substantive areas that we need to know about. But Alex, thanks so much for joining me on the show. Now let's turn to your icebreaker, your career hack, and your pick for our book this week. Okay, so it's time for this week's icebreaker. The rules are simple. I spin the wheel. It gives us a random question. I ask it and you answer. Sound good?
Yep.
All right, let's do this. What does this say here? All right. What was your favorite band 10 years ago?
I was actually thinking about this the other night, reminiscing that 10 years ago, actually Rage Against the Machine played at Reading Festival in England, near Oxford, where I live. And I went to that gig. So I think 10 years ago, it would have been Rage Against the Machine.
How do you stay productive and successful, Alex? What are some of your tactics for getting stuff done?
I think the crucial thing is getting into a rhythm, getting into a groove. And so I'm definitely somebody who prefers to just focus on one thing, get that thing finished, and then move on to the other thing. So kind of being in a rhythm is what's crucial for me.
Tell us about a book you're reading these days.
I'm currently reading a book called Class Matters by Charles Umeni, who's a sociologist at Leeds University in the UK. And that's kind of a fascinating book because it's really looking at how class isn't just about positions like being middle class or working class, but it's a process based on your experiences of going into the workplace, selling your labor, or being managed by people.
Well, thanks again, Alex, for joining us. Do you have any final ideas you'd like to leave with us before we close? And where can folks find you online?
So people can follow me on Twitter. It's Tom_swing is my Twitter handle. It's a little bit confusing, but also you can just search for Alex Wood at Oxford University.
And you've been listening to Dr. Alex Wood, who's a researcher with the Oxford Internet Institute and author of Good Gig, Bad Gig, Autonomy and Algorithmic Control in the Global Gig Economy. Dr. Wood, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That That concludes episode 156 of the podcast. Thanks so much to all of you for listening. If you like what we do, we'd absolutely love to hear from you. Please take a moment, head over to iTunes, give it a review. It helps others know what they can expect from the show and really helps us out. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you back here next week. Take care.